Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
If I can see properly through all the rain that's coming down, I'd say that it's pretty much a washed out 5 a.m. And you're listening to all Rain, Rain, Go the Hell Away! Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
This is our 150th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in several different multiverses for this week is... We remain at the depleted number of 121 followers on Twitter or X or whatever the hell that idiot Leon Scum is calling it this week, and still 121 is such a gigantic number. The next WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, October 11th, 2023 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. Elections are going on for the local station board. If you contributed enough to become a member by June 30th, you'll get to vote. We have gotten an email from management that says, quote, "Dear staff, please encourage your listeners who are WBAI listener members to vote in the local station board election," unquote. We have not reached quorum, and what happens is if at least 10% of listeners don't vote, we haven't reached quorum, because the quorum is 10%. And in that case, the election has to be extended by 2 weeks. It isn't just extended for BAI, it has to be extended for all of Pacifica. It will cost thousands and thousands of dollars if that has to happen. Please, if you're a listener or even if you're a staff, please vote. Vote now. It's really important that people vote. And, oh man, you can go to elections.pacifica.org for more information, and you should vote. Go there and vote. You should have gotten yourself a ballot in your email, because they're doing almost all of this by email now, and you would have gotten a ballot in email, and you will then have to, click on a thing, and it will bring you somewhere, and you will see the actual ballot, and you'll click on that and vote for people. And I'm not allowed to say for whom I would recommend you listeners vote. Too bad. But yes, please vote. We need that, because WBAI is, shall we say, not necessarily loved by the rest of the Pacifica Foundation. And if we are the cause of the elections being delayed and the elections costing thousands and thousands of dollars more, it's going to be bad for BAI. So again, please vote. You can go to elections.pacifica.org and you can read stuff up there and figure out what to do. If you don't have a ballot, you can go there. And if you contributed any $25 or more by June 30th, you're a member. If you didn't get a ballot or you can't find your ballot, again, elections.pacifica.org is where to go online, and you will be able to ask for a replacement ballot. If you think you probably need to vote and need a ballot, well, do it right now, because they're going to get crushed by people asking for ballots at the very last second. And won't it be a drag if the entire election gets extended a mandatory 2 weeks for all of Pacifica, and then BAI makes the quorum on October 1st, which is, you know, a day late. Yes, elections.pacifica.org. Please try that. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a.k.a. the CDC, their website isn't giving us all that information about COVID-19 in America anymore, although they're saying that total deaths in America stand at 1,144,539, which means that 2,757 people have died of COVID-19 since our last program 2 weeks ago. Yeah, we got preempted for another pitching special last week. So we were on 2 weeks ago. So basically, that death rate is more than 1,378 a week, which is even more than the rates for the previous few weeks, which were going up. So the death rate from COVID-19 is on the upsurge. Pickles of the North got her COVID-19 shot and her flu shot, too, at the same time. I'm waiting for the VA hospital to be able to go get mine, and we'll see how that all works out. It should happen. Maybe it'll happen this week. Usually in October is the time when they say, here it is. So we should get that. And so we're going to go in there and do that. And, oh boy, we want to make sure we don't get sick from this stuff, because I am a prime candidate for not surviving it, because I'm old, I'm decrepit, I've got medical issues, and oh, there are just so many different things that make it not good for me to get this thing. And also, if you survive it, you can get long COVID, which is very unpleasant. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on where we need to. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations and our bivalent booster shots. And the new boosters are already out there, and sometime, maybe even this coming week, I plan to go crashing into the VA hospital and get my shots. Pickles is already all shot up. Oh, boy. Pickles of the North is an inveterate reader. She's constantly reading books and things. What have you been reading lately, my dear?
Oh, boy, something really interesting. It's called Tremors in the Blood, Murder, Obsession, and the Birth of the Lie Detector. It's written by Amit Katwala, and he is a journalist from England. And he also has gone to school at Oxford and studied experimental psychology, which comes in really handy with this subject. And the book is published by Crooked Lane Books in 2023. So it's a brand new book. It's the story of how the polygraph was developed. And I tell you, R. Paul, it really is amazing that some people had this dream of, oh, how can we tell when someone is lying? Or how can we tell when someone is telling the truth? Oh, can we make a machine that would be able to do this? The answer in a nutshell is, I'm not giving away anything, this is a factual book, is no. But that didn't stop people from trying and basically getting this thing accepted, even unto today. And it talks about the origin of the blood pressure being taken. I read up online about, well, where did the blood pressure cuff come from? And then I read about the history of how people first started taking blood pressure, which involved glass tube and piercing, I believe, a horsey. So, but I know. And then there's this whole other thing where finally doctors got it down to a cuff and everything. But it's like, just because you get upset and your blood pressure goes up, that doesn't mean it's showing whether you're lying or telling the truth about things. But by golly, people just ran with this. One of the people who ran with it was William Moulton Marston, Wonder Woman's daddy.
Yeah, he started the comic strip Wonder Woman.
Yes, and he also did some work on this and wrote a paper, but the real guy who did a lot of this stuff was named John Larson, and he was a police officer in Berkeley, California, at the turn of the last century. And it's very interesting. The guy who was running the police force wanted things to be more scientific, chief of police there, because largely the cops were a bunch of thugs and very corrupt. And so the chief there instituted a new policy where he wanted to get people who had college degrees to be on the police force. And this guy had a degree. He had a PhD in physiology and psychology. And so he was inspired to try and make this machine that Marston sort of cobbled together even better. And so he worked on this. He took a more sophisticated way of measuring a person's blood pressure, which of course would have been for hypertension, you know, to see if somebody was sick or not. With this stylus and going on the paper, he took that and he put that in there. And he got it to a point where they started sort of testing it on people. And then another guy got involved who really was in it for fame. I mean, it just was a mess. It was a hot mess. It was used to see if people were telling the truth or not about very serious crimes like murder. And the author goes into these cases. The upshot is, in 1922, when they wanted to go in, I think it was Marston who wanted to bring evidence into court for somebody who was accused of murder, and the judge said, no, this is not a proven method. You're not going to bring it into court and use it as evidence. And that stood until 1998, when the Supreme Court said, well, we're going to leave it up to the individual jurisdictions whether you want to have this to be able to be presented as evidence. The thing is that it was used to bludgeon people. I mean, you get somebody sitting in a chair and you tell them, you know, this machine's going to know if you're telling the truth or not, which they still do today. So instead of like beating people with rubber hoses, they were beating them with the lie detector, which I believe was the popular term in the newspapers to call it polygraph. And then one guy, there was this one guy named Leonard Keeler, and he like actually put his name on this other guy's version of the lie detector and mass produced it and was really hot on selling it to police forces and insurance companies. And that really helped to popularize it. And so it ended up in the movies and on TV shows. In fact, it was on a TV show just a few weeks ago where they embarrassed an actress with it. I think it was America's Got Talent. And they put Sofia Vergara from Modern Family on there. And they asked her some embarrassing questions about her availability because she's going through a divorce. I mean, really, she was upset. Yes, that has nothing to do with lying or not lying. The thing is, there is a long history of people trying to figure out, oh, how can we use a machine to find out what people are thinking, basically, in this way? And I just want to read you a little excerpt from the book. The idea that the actions of the body could betray the mind has been around for centuries. In ancient China, suspects were made to chew uncooked rice. The grains were thought to stick in the dry, nervous mouths of the guilty. In 1730, the English author Daniel Defoe suggested that the racing pulse of potential pickpockets would give them away. Guilt carries fear always about with it, he wrote. There is a tremor in the blood of a thief. Scientific investigations into this idea began in the 1850s. The Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung used a galvanometer to track emotional changes in his patients, recording how the electrical conductance across the sweaty surface of the skin changed over time. In Russia, neuropsychologist Alexander Luria measured the reaction time and chattering fingertips of criminals under investigation. In the late 19th century, the Italian criminologist Cesare Lombroso interrogated suspects using an air-filled glove to measure blood pressure. Another contraption required the subject to plunge their forearm into a tank of water. The more the level of the liquid fluctuated as they spoke, the greater the chance they were lying. Lombroso's student Angelo Masso designed a carefully balanced bed that would tip to one side as blood rushed to a suspect's face in the course of a lie, although it was never built. So you can see this is not good science. This is not good science. And to sort of extrapolate out from taking someone's blood pressure to saying, this is going to show us if they're lying to us, the science is not there. And the really frightening thing is it's been used for decades now, decades and decades. And today, it's used as a tool of intimidation and coercion by many law enforcement agencies. And we're talking like big ones like the CIA down to like local law enforcement agencies. It's used on their own members too, as well as suspects. Governments use the lie detector. Employers, they love to use that to ferret out theft, right? And now, today, AI is being used to enhance the polygraph. And I'll just give you one more quote from the book from the author. He says, "The polygraph endures, not because it works, but because people think it does." And that is really frightening. And it's a really good book, and you should read it. Tremors in the Blood.
Yeah, the polygraph is, of course, pseudoscience. Yes. It always has been.
Yes.
Saying that, we can tell by your blood pressure that you're lying. No, there's a lot going on in your brain. Plus, if any of this had any real truth to it, I mean, the human body is so complex.
Yes.
One little thing doesn't do it. Now, they measure some other stuff. How sweaty are you? Some people just sweat a lot.
Yes.
Also, if it's like July and it's in an unair-conditioned room and you're doing a polygraph of somebody, you're probably going to get a galvanic response from measuring the conductivity of their skin anywhere because they're sweating. Of course they're sweating. And yes, we're just too complex for that. Also, we know for an absolute fact that there are, one, ways of beating a polygraph, and two, there are people who don't need to study this at all. They can lie like crazy. Nobody knows really if they're lying unless you've got, like, you know the actual truth and you see that they're at variance with that. But they just lie and it goes through, and the so-called lie detector, the polygraph, cannot detect anything from them because that's the way they are. There are sociopaths and psychopaths and people who study how to do these things. You know, if you have a spy agency, one of the things you do is you get a polygraph and you say, here is your lying 101. Course, the first thing we're going to do is teach you how to beat a polygraph. So if you have a spy going in to another country and you figure they might use a polygraph on them, you teach that spy how to beat it. And they beat it.
Well, Mr. Katwala talks about that a bit. And also, this now has been going on for 100 years, creating misery and misinformation, having a profound effect on some people's lives, anywhere from them being incarcerated wrongly, going back into the 20th century, people losing their jobs and their reputations. And it's just very bad because something that is a lot of hooey is being presented as being something scientific.
This is like the witchcraft trials.
Yes.
That didn't just happen in 1692. There have been witchcraft trials going on. They're going on in certain places today.
Yes.
Actual witches.
Yes.
This person's a witch. And we know that they were going on thousands of years ago, where you have all sorts of bizarre things of we'll detect a witch. And it's a bad human habit.
And you throw in the black box of artificial intelligence. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know where the hell that's going to go.
Neither do the people who are doing this.
Well, I'm sure they have a hope of where it's going to go.
Just like John Larson had a hope that this would make the police force less violent. It would be a better way of treating suspects. That did not pan out.
Well, thank you for that book review and a little talk about the phony baloney polygraph, my dear. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. We are having a deluge as we record this program, and it will probably still be going on when you hear this program on the air on Saturday morning. And what's happening is there are bands of rain, thick, heavy bands of rain. But between them, it's just a light rain or a drizzle, or maybe it seems like there's no rain at all between some of these bands. But overall, we have a huge amount of rain falling on New York City as we record this stuff. And it's really, really a torrential, literally torrential downpour we're getting. We had a big rain event last weekend when we were not on the air, and that gave us more than 2 inches of rain in New York City. And Pickles of the North, you just missed that one last Saturday, didn't you?
Yes, I managed to go out when it was just lightly sprinkling.
And then you got home. I think you got home for several minutes, and it came down. And we got a lot of rain. And we had more than 2 inches of rain. And the big rain we're having right now started on Thursday at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, according to Pickles of the North, our meteorological person. Did you know that you were a meteorological person?
Well, if looking out the window and noticing what's happening can do that, then yes, I am.
There you go. Yes, every expense is spared here at Back of the Book to make sure we come up with a very scientific assessment of everything. In any event, the ground is, of course, soaked from the previous big rainstorm, and it can't absorb much more. Of course, we're in a city, so almost everything's paved over, but we still rely on those grassy strips and parks and things to absorb a bunch of the water. And they absorbed a whole hell of a lot of water a week ago. They probably can't absorb more now. So we've got severe flooding at this point in time. So this month, September, it's not quite done yet, this month we got hit with the remains of Hurricane Lee, which dumped rain on us. Then we are apparently getting hit by Ophelia maybe more than once. I'm not sure. I'm confused about that. And so tropical storm. It's tropical storm Ophelia. And it's not a tropical storm anymore. It's just some water hanging around in the air, and it's dropping it all on us right now.
Yes, I believe that's what happened last weekend for some days. The remnants hit us, then they moved out over the ocean, got reinvigorated, and now they're back.
Yeah, that warm ocean. The water is warm, and it really gets the hurricanes and tropical storms going. In any event, New York City has been hit with full-blown hurricanes that have not dumped this much rain on us in the past. This is an enormous amount of rain. From what the TV weather people are saying, this already is New York City's second wettest September on record. Oh, boy. And we're getting flooded out. Some of you probably have already been looking at stuff online and on TV about everything getting flooded.
And hopefully you yourself have not been flooded.
Predictions had said that New York City was going to get 2 to 4 inches of rain, maybe 3 inches. And then the week went on, and there was another forecast, they said, that we might get as much as 6 inches, which is like, wah? 2 to 4 inches is gigantic. 6 inches? Man, oh man. Well, that outlying prediction is coming true. In fact, when I looked a little while ago, They said that Brooklyn had gotten more than 7 inches of rain in less than 24 hours. Everything is flooded now, and the sewers were overflowing by noon. And it's not just rainwater that ends up in the sewers. Yes, what happens is New York City is very old. Parts of Manhattan, parts of Brooklyn are hundreds of years old. And people started putting things together. They said, hey, let's have a sewer system a couple of hundred years ago. And they put in the sewers, and storm drains weren't that big a deal because it would just run off. And they had canals in the middle of Manhattan, and it wasn't that big a deal. And there was a great deal of earth in the city then. We didn't have paved roads. We didn't have concrete sidewalks. We had dirt and grass and trees. We had forests in Brooklyn back then. And so they just said, okay, there that is. Not a big thought to storm drains. In other parts of the world, where the cities are, especially where the cities are a bit younger, and I think Los Angeles counts for this, they have a storm drain system so that the storm drains in the street don't lead into the sewer. They lead into specialized areas where the storm surge, the rain from the storm, can be accumulated and sent out to someplace to, you know, go into the sea or whatever. And like, for example, in Los Angeles, they have these gigantic concrete storm drain things that they literally drive trucks through. So we don't have that here. We have our basically 18th century sewers. And when it rains a lot, the sewers are where the storm drains lead to. You can tell this by going past some of the storm drains in the summer and sniffing. So, yeah, this is a little issue we have with New York City, and I don't think it's something that could be really fixed in anything like, you know, a couple of years or something. It may not be fixable at all because it would have to be a parallel system set up, and it would have to go through every street. This is not going to happen. So it's a problem. And so our sewers are overflowing. And here's a little tiny piece from the June 2023 Scientific American. It's just a teeny-weeny piece, and it says this, quote, "Storms sometimes cause raw sewage to spill into the ocean, and a study of San Diego's beaches showed this contamination can enter sea spray. 3/4 of bacteria found in the beach's air came from this source, exposing even those who avoid the water." Ooh. So you got some poo-poo in the air. And, oh, man. With that in mind, I will note that Coney Island is not that great a place to go to right now. I'm glad we're not going to Coney Island today. One day we'll go to Coney Island again. Haven't been there in more than 2 years, but I haven't. And but today is not the day to do it because the sewers are, you know, they go to treatment plants, but the treatment plants get overwhelmed by a high volume of water, and there's no way to avoid that. So the raw sewage gets flushed out into New York Harbor. And you get into lower New York Bay, where Coney Island is, and you've got some effluent flows there. And if you're on the beach at Coney Island right now, as the wind blows and you get some salt spray, well, be careful not to lick your lips, because guess what you're ingesting? But anyway, that's one of the things that happens in this kind of situation. And, of course, we're hearing all sorts of stuff about what's flooded where. I remember when I was a kid, back in the 50s, at some point, I guess this was the middle 50s, we had a drought in New York City, and it lasted, and it was quite long. I think pretty much the summer was an all drought, and plants were dying, and everybody was saying, oh, this is terrible. And then one night, along came a storm. It was a big storm. And we had thunder and lightning, which I liked to watch. And we were at our apartment. And, of course, Park Slope is properly named. It slopes. And the sort of the top of it is Prospect Park. And Prospect Park, of course, can absorb some water. But it can't absorb all the water. Plus, it's got a lot of pavement. And we lived on 1st Street and 7th Avenue. And I remember looking out the window at the tremendous amount of rain. It was torrential. And noticed that the rain was flooding things and the water was coming down 1st Street at a tremendous speed because it is shaped that way. It's, you know, it's on a ramp. And it's a paved ramp, so the asphalt doesn't slow it down at all. It just goes shooting through there. It was very impressive to me as a kid. It was as if a fire hose had been turned on, and it was really quite the flood. And I imagine something like that may be happening today because Park Slope is still a slope.
It absolutely happened Friday, absolutely, because I saw some footage of it, and yikes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so, and Mayor Adams, good grief, Mayor Adams finally went on the air today, Friday, while everything's getting flooded, and declared a state of emergency. People are asking why he didn't close the schools since it was known that this huge rain event was coming. Some schools have been flooded, it turns out. One school had to be evacuated because they're full of students. And we're hoping that WBAI doesn't get flooded out. BAI has a basement that is pretty easy to get water into. And, oh boy, we're also hoping that the ops person on duty tonight can get to the, Friday night, can get to the station. If you're hearing this program early on the morning of September 30th, 2023, on the air, yes, he got there. If you're not hearing this, then, well, I don't know how you're hearing it. So one thing I wonder is, could this be the future for New York City? It was predicted years, decades ago, that if global warming kept on going on, the climate would change, and New York City would end up with the climate that Miami, Florida had in the middle of the 20th century. Well, the climate has changed. It's demonstrable at this point. And so how much of this are we going to be seeing in the future? I mean, this is all happening because of the warmer ocean waters feeding the hurricanes and tropical storms and all of that stuff. Luckily, some of the bigger storms that formed in the Atlantic, and they got quite powerful, they took off to the east after they got into higher latitudes and just stayed in the Atlantic Ocean, didn't bother us at all. A question I keep wondering about is, when will this September's record rain totals not be high enough anymore to be in the top 10 wettest Septembers? That could happen, and it's only a question of when, I think, at this point in time. We have a birthday greeting. On this wet day, we wish a merry birthday to our wet saddle pal, Maxwell J. Schmied.
Happy birthday, Max.
Man, merry birthday, Maxwell. And we have a little tradition here. And here are four other guys who are wishing you a merry birthday, Maxwell. Right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. Speaking of climate and stuff like that, a group of scientists is predicting that mammals may only have another 250 million years left. Yes, mammals started out 250 million years ago, and it started out as like mice, things like mice. And mammals were different from most of the other creatures on the Earth at that time, which were things like various lizards and reptiles and dinosaurs. And so they were a unique thing, and they didn't go very far. And then a space rock hit the planet Earth, and that was it for the dinosaurs and a lot of other things. And, or as they put it in some publications these days, non-avian dinosaurs, which means it's pretty well established at this point in time that birds are, in fact, dinosaurs. So mammals started doing well after things went to hell in a handbasket 65 or 66 million years ago. And the scientists are saying, well, that was then, and in the future, Might not be so good for mammals. We are, of course, all mammals. And the scientists found that a brighter sun, a change in the geography of the continents, and increases in carbon dioxide will warm the planet to the point that mammals could not survive on Earth. And part of this is because we make heat. We are warm-blooded animals, and our cells generate heat, and our muscles generate heat. We actually waste most of the energy we put into our muscles, and it comes out as heat, not motion. And so we will be too hot. Well, we will be too hot. Human beings aren't going to have to really worry about this. 250 million years from now, not only will you and I not be here anymore, but humans won't be here anymore. Humans, there's no way humans are going to be around a million years from now. And that's a tiny amount of time, a mere million years from now, as opposed to 250 million years from now. This is because the human genome is constantly changing. And all species have a lifespan, so to speak. Various species have come and gone in the course of the Earth, and human beings will go away too. Again, we know for a fact that there was a problem some years ago, speculation that men were becoming extinct. Further study showed that the changes in male DNA, human male DNA, were not going extinct, it was just evolution, and we were changing. I suspect that civilization, which we call it, sometimes civilization is very uncivilized, civilization is shaping the human male. It used to be that if you were a hyper-aggressive, monstrous thing that went around impregnating all the females you could, as much as you could, and murdering your rivals left and right, that was it, that's what everybody did, that kind of male doesn't survive well in a civilized place, because they say, oh, geez, Charlie's a real creep, let's kill him, and you know, everybody gangs up on Charlie. And so that is probably shaping human males. And so we're changing a whole bunch. And in many ways, I think that's probably good. Having males adapt to civilization, even the civilization, what we call civilization, that's a good thing. However, whether we get to some great exalted state or not, the human genome isn't going to last all that long, and humans aren't going to last all that long. However, there will still be mammals, and they're not going to last more than another 250 million years. So, oh boy, this is it for mammals, people. And a Dr. Alexander Farnsworth, who's a paleoclimate scientist at the University of Bristol, led the team of scientists, and he said, quote, it's a triple whammy that becomes unsurvivable, unquote. And again, it's going to be because we're going to have the sun will be brighter, and the geography of the continents will increase the land mass, and carbon dioxide will increase. And what happens is that it all heats up. And a lot of this study was sparked by another study published in 2020. That study predicted that a new supercontinent dubbed Pangaea Ultima, there was a Pangaea supercontinent long ago. There have been a number of supercontinents in the history of the planet Earth. And mathematically, they have to happen. Because you have plate tectonics, they heat up everything, and the continents are moving around. You can look this up online and see various parts of which continent used to be where. We know that, for instance, parts of Central Park, you can look at the rocks, and they're from northern and western Africa, and there are all sorts of things going on like that.
And you can tell because you can put them together like a puzzle.
Yeah. Africa and South America, people have noted since there have been explorations hundreds of years ago saying, gee, they looked like they could fit together. And they did. Before there was the Mid-Atlantic Ridge that started coming up about 135 million years ago. And it started just breaking things. And then it expanded and expanded. And you see it now. We have the Atlantic Ocean. Just as we have, for instance, Madagascar used to be part of Africa. The Arabian Peninsula used to be joined with Africa. The Red Sea is the result of stuff coming up under it and pushing those land masses apart. And there is the Rift Valley in Africa, where they find a lot of fossils because the land has been split open there. That is also, in the future, very probably going to end up making another island off the coast of what will then be Africa. I don't think any people are going to be around to watch that. And they have noted that in the past, the supercontinents have had an effect on the climate. They tend to warm it up a lot. And the scientists are predicting that this Pangaea Ultima supercontinent will form along the equator at about 250 million years. The huge landmass will greatly help to heat things up. There have been supercontinents in the past, and there is evidence that they also heated up the atmosphere. Well, humans won't be here nearly that long anyway, because we're just going to cease to exist the way things go. You can't keep your genome from changing, unless, of course, we give it to the AIs and they change our genome. But the thing is, the human genome is just going to change, and eventually it'll change into unviability. However, maybe the AIs will be it. Maybe the computers and the artificial intelligences that we create will take over. They can probably figure out ways to not get too zapped up by the heat. Plus, there's an article, there's a cover article in the October Scientific American that says, human beings will never be able to live in space, which means human beings are not going to travel to places like Mars and the moons of the large planets, because you got to spend a lot of time in space and it's probably just not going to work out. However, if you have machines, they might be able to survive the radiation of outer space. So that could be the future, and I, for one, welcome our future AI rulers and pledge my undying loyalty to their silicon insides. I will note, of course, that we've talked before about how things will work, and between 500 million and 1 billion years from now, there isn't going to be anything living on the planet, whether or not there's a supercontinent. Because the sun will get warm enough to wipe out the atmosphere and boil off the oceans of the Earth, and that'll be it. There will be no need to say, oh, gee, what will happen to life on Earth when the sun gets really big and maybe even engulfs the Earth, because that's going to happen 5 billion years from now. And if the Earth is engulfed by the sun, it will be engulfing a dead rock, a rock that's been dead for about 4 billion years.
So you mentioned like a 1 million-year lifespan for the human race?
At most.
How did you figure that?
Oh, I've read this in various places. And yeah, it can't last that long. I mean, you look at how old humans are. Humans like us are maybe 200,000 years old. And there's been significant change in the genome. And the changes are happening in males right now. It doesn't seem to be happening in females quite the same way. But those changes are, I mean, people study these things and they see how other species last a while and die off. And this is it.
So we are bested by the horseshoe crab.
Oh, yeah, horseshoe crab is lasting a hell of a lot longer than we are. Horseshoe crab is perhaps as much as 440 million years old. Humans aren't going to get anywhere near that.
We're all doomed, you know. The whole silly, pathetic lot of us. Doomed by the air we're about to breathe.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Here comes the WBAI pitching train. We're coming down the tracks to say, please help us. Call 1-212-209-2950 and pledge some amount of money to help WBAI survive. Yes, this is WBAI New York, and we are listener-sponsored non-commercial, which means we don't run commercials for Chevys or some other crap. We ask you to be our sponsors. You are the sponsors. We ask you to get up, go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950. When they pick up at the call center, because you're not calling BAI, you're calling a call center, when they pick up, tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. BAI buddy is the name we have for sustaining members here at WBAI, and what happens is you call them up, you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, and then you give them your credit card or debit card number, and you then tell them what day of the month you would like your credit card or debit card billed, and they will bill it on that month. That way it comes out of your bank account or your credit card at a convenient time for you. And you can commit to sending us $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month or more. However much you want to send us, we'll be glad to get it. And that'll be it. You'll be donating to WBAI on a monthly basis. And if you want to make a one-time donation, which a lot of people want to do, call the same number, 1-212-209-2950, and say, I want to make a one-time donation to WBAI, and you can pledge any amount of money you want. If you want to pledge a whole bunch, that's fine. And we want to at this point say, yes, we want to thank Seth and Tony and Bettina. Seth and Tony and Bettina have, in fact, pledged. We can't see what's coming in right now. We're not in the studio. We have to be pre-recorded. One of these days, we may be able to go back live. I'm kind of glad we can't get in there to record, to do a live program today, because we would get washed away. But anyway, we thank them, and we would thank you if you pledge. Send me an email saying that you have pledged. I am rpm@glib.com. That's rpm@glib.com. Let me know you've pledged, and you will be helping us. Again, 1-212-209-2950. We do need to hear from you, folks. We need to hear from you right now. It would be very good if people could call us up. Please call 1-212-209-2950. You don't hear anybody else talking about the end of the world, the end of the human species, and talking about various science things, at least not like this. And we're going to do more of that, of course. We're probably going to look at that Scientific American article about humans not surviving in space. May talk about that in a future program. And we have other science things we've got lined up that we're going to talk about when we can fit them in. And so that's what's going to happen. So again, also, if you like these overnight programs that are not your average radio program, well, if you call 1-212-209-2950 and pledge, you are also telling management that there are listeners for these programs. There are, again, calls from people to say, hey, rent out WBAI signal from midnight to 6 a.m., and that'll solve all of your financial problems. Again, finally, 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number now, and we thank you if you do. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is...
This Week, Everything Old is New Again, Again, with Mr. David Kenny.
Wowee! Dave Kenny used to follow us years ago, and this week he's following us again. I don't think this is permanent. In any event, vote! Please vote in the local station board elections. The polls are supposed to close at 11:59 p.m. tonight. On WBAI.org, you can scroll down to almost the bottom of the page and click on the notice in the box that says, quote, note to listeners, unquote. Get your ballot if you can, but vote and try to keep dry and enjoy the days that are coming up after the deluge is over. They're going to be nice autumnal days here in early autumn. And above all, remember what that looking around for an inner tube to float in Dormouse said.
The street, light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day. You'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but